Tonight on The Download, Democrat State Senator Daniel Biss, legendary EDM DJ Paul Oakenfold, and legendary hip-hop DJ Pete Rock. And now here's your host, a man who ate way too much cake today, Justin Kaufman.
It is so true, man. Today was the Walk of Fame. I had like, I don't even want to say how many pieces of cake I had. It was all sorts of cake. It was like an orange cake. There was a cheesecake. There was chocolate cake. It was just cake. But that's what you do, right? That's what you do when you celebrate the WGN Walk of Fame. You eat cake. Lots of it. Such a great day today to get out here early. Pete Zimmerman and I were there at the festivities. We're burning it at both ends for the fact that, you know, we got here probably 9:30, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, though. I kind of feel it.
Do you?
I feel good.
All right.
It might be the cake. It could be the cake. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a lot of cake. It's just a lot of cake. I ate so much cake today. It's like, you know, like I usually don't see that much cake. And I think like my 22-year-old body kicked in where I was like, I better eat this cake because if I don't, I got to go into hibernation. You know, I got to stock up for the summer. I think I got it mixed up. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio till 11 o'clock. Great, great show lined up for you tonight. I'm very excited here to be with you on Michigan Avenue. It's a beautiful day. The rain has stopped. If you are driving out somewhere for Memorial Day plans, if you're getting off of work, if you got to work, whatever it is, I'm very happy that I can be your companion, ride shotgun with you tonight here on WGN Radio. Okay, coming up tonight, we're going to talk with State Senator Daniel Biss. Last night, we had Senator Matt Murphy on. So I want to turn the tables, maybe talk to the other side of the aisle. A lot to talk about in Springfield continuing. Today was a little chaotic. Got a little mayhem. A little mayhem in the madhouse. State of Illinois really gearing up for a big weekend to end the spring session. State Senator Daniel Biss will join us after the news at 7:30. Coming up at 8 o'clock, two of the greatest DJs in the history of DJs. And I'm not just throwing that around. These aren't just sort of empty superlatives. These are two of the best in the EDM realm. Paul Oakenfold, he had the hit Starry Eye Surprise back in the 90s, but he has been behind most of, if not all, of the popular music that you've heard in dance in the last two, three decades. Tremendous, tremendous force in music. He's going to be at the Mid for a special show this weekend. Great club over there in Halsted. So we're going to talk with Paul coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Then, how great is this? Hip-hop DJ, pioneer, Pete Rock. Pete Rock and CL Smooth. One of the greatest rap combos of the 90s. Pete Rock produced Biggie. He produced Nas. He produced Public Enemy. He produced Kanye West. He's produced pretty much every single rap artist that is out today. And he continues to do it. He's going to be at the Promontory in Hyde Park this weekend. So we'll talk to him about his legendary career and the news that he is reuniting with CL Smooth, Pete Rock and CL Smooth, back on with a West Coast tour. Shall we maybe expect some new music? That's coming up as well. And coming up at 10 o'clock, I'm very excited about this. The frying pan is back. It's Steve Gadlin time. At the Walk of Fame, I got to tell you, Pete, I got a ton of people coming up to me going, really love Steve Gadlin on Friday nights. Hey, we love the frying pan.
Me as well.
Really liked what I heard about the banana peeler. Yes. The electronic banana peeler really got people's attention. So maybe we're onto something here, you know? Tonight might be the night. It's nice. The rain kind of washed away the feeling from last week,
you know?
So maybe today we start anew, and I think that Steve Gadlin, he's been texting me all week, says he's got a winner.
He's very confident, right.
So we'll talk with Steve in the 10 o'clock hour. All right, news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier, production with Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, the carryout. Stay with us. All right, coming up after 7:30, Daniel Biss is going to join us, talk about what's happening in Springfield. But right now, it's time for the carryout. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to.
Boom, 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 boom Here are today's top stories. Springfield is turning into Game of Thrones, but with more boobs. Governor Rauner vetoed a bill that would let the city of Chicago and police and fire change the way they fund pensions. Rauner said that this was just kicking the can down the road like we've done before. Analysts say that this is really just a political shot across the bow to the Democrats. You don't want my turnaround agenda? Good luck with your pension crisis. This will force a sharp rise in pension payments and probably make Mayor Emanuel raise property taxes again. Yeah, that'll show him, Governor. Wait, show who? Me? Seven Republican lawmakers asked Governor Rauner to restart talks with AFSCME over a new contract. Talks have stalled, and now it's just turned into a blame game. Both sides say the other isn't acting in good faith. This is a big deal because without a new contract, it doesn't seem like labor is going to compromise on any turnaround items. This afternoon, Rauner responded to the lawmakers' letter with two of his own letters, N and O. This dude's really good at saying no. I think he needs to take an improv class. Yes and. Yes and. So we have a governor who says no and a speaker of the House who can't figure out math. Is this Springfield or kindergarten? I think kindergartners actually do more work than the lawmakers. Yeah, and less nap time. The Chicago Bears sent out feelers to season ticket holders for South parking lot passes. Why is this news? Well, there's supposed to have been construction for a new Lucas Museum in that spot. But the Bears must have some info because they think the parking lot will still be there this fall. I have an idea. Do the Lucas Museum in the shape of the Millennium Falcon and then have it hover in air. Sort of like a helicopter tour. Wait a second. Oh my God, did I just solve this problem? Pete, I think I solved this problem. Okay, what's next? Let's see. School funding. I know. Bake sale with medical marijuana. All right. Pensions. Fund pensions by collecting all the money that's left on our Starbucks gift cards. I'm on a roll. What's next? Chicago Bulls. Oh, man. There's no fix. A Metro train derailed near Union Station today, messing up holiday weekend traffic. I don't know what's worse, a Friday night derailment or a Friday night veto. I'll say this. That train's a coward. The CTA is extending bus routes for Beyonce this weekend. She's at Soldier Field tonight and tomorrow. Of course they have to extend the bus routes. Otherwise, how is Jay-Z going to get back to the hotel? He's definitely not riding in a limo. Get on that 1-4-7 bus, Jay-Z, or I swear I will put out another album. In weather? All right, we get it, Mother Nature. You want it to rain. Okay, fine. I hope you didn't ruin all the baseball diamonds in advance of the Little League seasons that are starting up this weekend. And if that's the case, shame on you. In sports, the Cubs fought through the rain and beat up on the Phillies today. It just keeps rolling and rolling. The Phillies are no slouch this year either. I mean, they're no Von Hayes or Juan Samuel Phillies, but still, they're surprising. In basketball, the Golden State Warriors beat the Thunder last night to stay alive in the Western Conference Finals. They're down 3-2 with the series going back to Oklahoma City. Isn't OKC where they watch the game outside the arena? I hate that. We don't do that in Chicago. I mean, we may stand outside, but we're not watching the game. We're old school loitering, looking to pickpocket, you know, like real sports fans. In hockey, the Stanley Cup is set. It's San Jose versus Pittsburgh. Sharks versus Penguins. Boring versus who cares? Sorry, I know there are a ton of hockey fans who will tell me otherwise, but I'm having a hard time getting excited for a Pittsburgh-San Jose showdown. At least if it was the Hawks, I could stand outside the United Center and pickpocket or sell my light-up toys, whatever they do. The Bears officially signed their first-round pick, Leonard Floyd, to a 4-year deal. That's good because it would be super dumb if any rookie held out with this new NFL contract. I mean, they get what they get and they don't complain, right? The days of Cedric Benson, those days are over. Cedric Benson. What a tool. And finally tonight, President Obama was in Hiroshima today, and he called for an end to nuclear weapons. Probably a good idea with Trump on the horizon. But if we get rid of nuclear weapons, what will our world's leaders use to prove they have a big defense? That's the carryout for May 27, 2016. Hey, have a great Memorial Day weekend. We have so much coleslaw. I mean, the coleslaw gets a side of coleslaw. More to come tonight. State Senator Daniel Biss is going to join us after the news, talk about what went down in Springfield today. It was a lot. Also coming up at 8 o'clock, some of the best DJs this world has ever seen, Paul Oakenfold and Pete Rock. It's a download on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk with State Senator Daniel Biss. He will join us to talk about all the shenanigans in Springfield today. Rob Martyr's back. Hey, Rob.
Shenanigans.
Right.
That's a great way to describe it.
It is. They it's getting, it's as the kids say, ridic.
Are we beyond silly at this point?
You know,
are we aggravated? Where are we?
Well, it's so hard to tell. I mean, and it's also, I believe that the politicians, at least at the leaders down in Springfield, they should have their politics privileges revoked. Like, no decisions can be made about politics. They need to balance a budget. Mm-hmm. And right now, it seems like every move that's made as we get closer and closer to the deadline is all about, you know, saving their own hide or their party's hide or anything that has to do with what the voters might do in November. That's great. So...
I you know what? I don't even know what to say anymore. I just report on it now. It's
we missed you yesterday, buddy.
I missed you guys.
We had a great hour at 10 o'clock that you're going to love. We're going to do it again, called Swap Meet. We did Swap Meet, finally.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
All right.
And it was
excellent.
Great. People called in. It was so fun. They said, I got this from 1940, this map of Chicago. Like, and Greg, who was in the studio with us, was tremendous. He was like, he was essentially, it became like Antiques Roadshow for Chicago. He's like, that's not worth anything. Or I'd buy that.
Yeah,
it was really good, man. We're gonna have some fun coming up.
I got a lot of junk that I think might be worth something.
Oh, you're gonna love it. Then you'll love Greg.
All right. Good stuff.
That's coming up. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Like I said, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, great hour of entertainment. EDM DJ Paul Oakenfold, hip-hop DJ Pete Rock, two of the best DJs in the history of DJs. I know that I can, you know, I'm a talk show host, hyperbole, but, I mean, look it up. Millions and millions and millions of records sold. These guys know how to do it. They'll be coming up here in the 8 o'clock hour, but first, wow, what a day in Springfield, but it's really been what a late afternoon in Springfield. Word came out that Governor Rauner has vetoed the bill to change the way pensions are done for fire and police to be able to extend so that the city could cover the cost and be able to, pass those savings on to us. But he vetoed that, so it automatically creates a $220 million hole in the city budget, which probably will be filled by property tax hikes again. Not to mention the budget, which is still not passed the state Senate, and the continuing, which I find to be very interesting, Pete, the continuing rank and file, rank and file dance that's going on. You're seeing more Democrats upset on both sides in the House and the Senate with what happened with Speaker of the House Mike Madigan's, you know, budget deal. Yesterday we talked with Senator Matt Murphy. Today we talked with Senator Daniel Biss. He's a Democrat from Skokie and other northern suburbs. Senator Biss, welcome back to the show. How are you, my friend?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me, Justin.
All right, let's talk about this because this was, all week this has been quite a back and forth. I mean, I venture to say chaotic, if not completely manic. What do you think of what's happened here when it comes to the budget and the speaker's budget that's now waiting for vote in the Senate?
Well, we've been in a state of embarrassing crisis for a year now, practically. This is the end of the legislative session. We adjourn May 31st because the fiscal year starts July 1. We still don't have a budget for the fiscal year that started this past July. We're almost through the fiscal year and have had no budget for a variety of reasons. And so now we're supposed to be passing next year's budget, but of course we also should be passing last year's budget. And there's no agreement still. So the House passed something that has, you know, obviously is pretty far from perfect. Mm-hmm. It's wildly out of balance. And we've got only a few days to improve on it. And, you know, we'll see where we get.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some of the hard questions. You ready for that? I think you're always ready for that. All right. So, one of the things that was mentioned is that these working groups behind closed doors were working. We had Representative Sandak on, Senator Murphy, talking about bipartisan compromise, people coming together. Why not let that process play out? Why just throw that out and decide to go back to the way that we've been budgeting in the past? I know a way that you're not that happy with. Why do that?
No one's doing that. The working groups are still working. They're still meeting. They're hopefully going to get somewhere constructive. They're, from what I understand, not all that close to agreement. And we're talking about big, big issues. So, you know, it's Friday. The legislative session ends on Tuesday. And I think it's useful to continue trying for a comprehensive deal, but simultaneously also figuring out what plan B is going to be.
For all of
so anybody who says the working groups are disbanded is just, you know, it's just either confused or else they're lying.
Okay, so let's talk about you know, the big issue here is that this budget is unbalanced. What's it going to take to get a balanced budget, and do you think that that's possible by Tuesday?
So what it's going to take is Democrats and Republicans coming together and deciding to make tough choices to balance the budget. That's going to include tough choices on both sides of the ledger. It's going to require some cuts that would be difficult for everyone, especially Democrats. It's going to require new revenues that would be difficult for everyone, especially Republicans. But it's doable, and everybody agrees it's doable. The reason it's been so hard to get there is that there's been an insistence from the governor that these other issues, you know, collective bargaining, union rights, workers' compensation, stuff like that, also must be part of the deal. And that's what the working groups have been trying to focus on. And the question is, can we reach agreement on all those issues and the budget by Tuesday? I sure hope so, but frankly, I'm skeptical, and I wish that we'd be in a position where everyone would agree, hey, no matter whether or not we get to an agreement on workers' compensation, there's still no reason not to come to an agreement on the budget. Let's just do that and stop punishing people and hurting people for literally no reason.
Well, I mean, the governor will say that his turnaround agenda items are items that are going to help stop Illinois from doing the things they've been doing to get us here in the first place. That, I mean, he seems to, you know, I don't know if this is necessarily compromise. If this is compromise, I don't know what is compromise. But the concept being that he's saying, you know what, these are important things, and they are budgetary because it's time that Illinois, you know, stops overspending and starts to tighten the belt. And so the question just is when you get an unbalanced budget that's actually bigger from Speaker of the House Mike Madigan, is that just politics?
Well, first of all, I mean, let's unpack a few of the things you said, right? The governor's got these agenda items. He calls them his turnaround agenda. And he definitely believes in them. He's a passionate guy who really thinks that they'd be good for Illinois. I happen to think they'd be catastrophic for Illinois. But they aren't budget items. He may believe, and we all may believe, that we need to tighten our belts and be more fiscally responsible. But that's not what his agenda items are about. They're about things like the workers' compensation system that makes payment to people who are injured on the job, or collective bargaining and union rights. That's not about the budget. So the question is, can we reach agreement on all these things at once? And if so, awesome, that's great. You know, the more agreements, the better. But if not, can we at least figure out what we can agree on for now and do that first? As far as whether it's a good idea for the Democrats to pass a more unbalanced budget, no, it's not. I think we'd be better off passing a balanced budget, and I'm going to continue fighting for that like I always have. But the longer the laundry list of things that we have to agree on before we're allowed to do anything, the harder it's going to be to find agreement by midnight on Tuesday.
You know, obviously, there's so many issues that you want to take care of here in the spring session, and there's things from criminal justice to other issues that are important to the state of Illinois. But it seems like this issue continues to be the one that everyone should be focused on. Talk about the tenor in Springfield, because it seems like, you know, I read Greg Hines' piece today in Cranes about, is it going to be war? Is it going to be peace with the veto of the city of Chicago pension deal with fire and police? And it looks like Rauner chose war. As a lawmaker down there, Daniel, as someone who is involved with this, is it getting stressed? Is there tension? Is there more politics at play than there should be in the last couple of days of this session?
Yes, and also yes. it's stressful for good reason, right? I mean, dude, people are really being harmed. This is not theoretical, and it's not a joke, and it's not a game. There's real harm out there, whether it's homeless people who are unable to have housing services, whether it's the mentally ill, the disabled, people suffering from addiction, domestic violence, sexual assault, kids that can't afford to go to college. I mean, this is real stuff. And so in my attitude is, if someone has my job and is sleeping well at night, they're just not, they're not thinking about it right. We all have to feel responsibility and stress about this. But there also is a lot of political tension and a lot of political positioning and a lot of brinksmanship that I think doesn't help. I think that when you've got, and look, Governor Rauner and I disagree about a lot of things, and that's fine. In fact, that's healthy, and it's a beautiful facet of democracy. But when two people disagree about many things but still want to make progress, the way to begin is to find those few things, maybe even those small few things, where there's agreement. Mm-hmm. And work on those. Find an agreement.
Well, where is that?
Use the agreement to make some progress and also build some trust. Well, I think we should all agree we want to have a balanced budget. That's
okay.
But I mean, know that we all agree that there should be some reforms to criminal justice. If we all agree that our local governments are too convoluted and that we have too many of them, they should be streamlined. I think we all agree that our education funding system needs to be improved. I mean, these are all things that there's broad area of agreement. And you know, my way of doing it might be very different than the governor's way, and I think we should be able to sit down and say, hey, let's find a halfway approach. The challenge is on things like, should we have unions or not? If his attitude is no and mine is yes, well, maybe we can wait till next year to figure out how to split the difference on that one.
Yeah. Okay, so the big issues, you know, I saw that the lawmakers, the Republican lawmakers, sending a letter to Bruce Rauner asking for talks to be picked back up when it comes to the big AFSCME negotiations for new contract. Also, the veto of the pension, which I think is kind of interesting. I want to get your take on it. The veto of the pension change for the city of Chicago when it comes to police and fire was essentially the same concept that got Bruce Rauner voted in, which is Bruce Rauner is going to help us figure out how to stop kicking the can down the road and deal with our issues now. That's essentially what he said in the statement. We got to stop doing what did to get us here, where we defer and put billions of dollars on taxpayers' shoulders. But it also causes in the short term a serious problem for the city of Chicago, which is just going to put that burden on the shoulders of taxpayers. What's your take, Daniel? What do you think of the veto of the fire and police deal here in Chicago?
Well, I think he's making a mistake. And I think this is a pretty good illustration of, you know, working styles and approach. I didn't love that bill. That bill, I spent a lot of time ruminating on what to do on that bill, because there is some delay of payments. I know that delaying pension payments is a mistake that's gotten us here. But I didn't just read that headline. I then said, okay, there's more, though. It delays payments compared to what's in the law before we passed the bill, but it still increased payments significantly from the previous year. Hmm. So what it said was, hey, the city's going to put in a lot more money than it put in last year, just a little less money than the law said before. So they're still committing themselves to a big increase in payments. That's a step in the right direction. It also assured that those payments would actually be made, which is a huge step in the right direction. And also it constitutes an agreement between the city and the unions that represent the workers. And that's also, I think, an important part of finding a collaborative way out of these problems. And so I wrestled with it and then finally wound up speaking on the Senate floor in support of the bill, saying, hey, look, this isn't perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. It has the city putting in more money. It's a step toward fiscal responsibility. I could be a bomb thrower and say, oh, no, it's not perfect. Or I could say, hey, look, let's work together and find little steps in the right direction. I'm going to pick that second option. And I wish the governor had done that. Instead, he vetoed it in its entirety, which puts the city into even more of a fiscal tailspin and picks a fight with Rahm Emanuel and the Democrats in the legislature. And you already saw Rahm made this really, really aggressive statement in response.
Yep, here he comes, right?
Okay, great. Great, now we're fighting more. But, you know, what does that help? What does that help?
Well, have a great Memorial Day weekend, Daniel.
Hey, thank you.
When do you guys go? Do you guys go back tomorrow? Is that the?
We're actually not in tomorrow. We're going to go back in Sunday afternoon.
Senator Daniel Biss, he represents Democrat state senator who represents Skokie and some of the northern suburbs. Senator Biss, thanks for taking some time out tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on again, Justin. I'll see you.
It's The Download here on WGN Radio. Coming up at 8 o'clock, superstar DJ, Turn It Up. Paul Oakenfold is playing at the Mid. Have you been to the Mid? Have you ever been to the Mid, Pete?
I have not.
The Mid is a dance, like an EDM dance club at like Lake and Halsted. And I've never been in there, but I go by there all the time. And I have been in there, but not at the peak times.
For different reasons.
But it's a great little club that's really unassuming. And then they got a little sign that says it's going to be there. And I always drive past there on Halsted, and I'm like, oh my God, Tiesto's coming here? Like, oh my God, they have the biggest, is that a cover band?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the real person. And so I saw that Paul Oakenfold was coming. And Paul Oakenfold is a tremendous DJ and loved his music for a long time. I'm not very up to speed on EDM music, you know, dance music, but he predates that.
Yeah.
He's a trance house music DJ who really was the godfather, one of the godfathers of the sort of EDM movement.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk with him coming up at 8 o'clock here. And then after that, Pete Rock, which would be great.
Great.
Pete Rock and CL Smooth. Oh, that's man.
Exciting.
Love it.
That's a Friday.
Oh, the main ingredient. That record, man. That got me there. Now, that's a record I listened to. I went down to Harper Court in Hyde Park, which I think is awesome that he's going to be at Promontory, which is the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went down to Harper Court, I remember I bought the Pete Rock and CL Smooth main ingredient record there. You know, like I was cool hanging out. I was like, with the UFC kids. I'm like, I'm going to get the Pete Rock record. I'm going to get the new Pete Rock record. And, I had it forever. Still have those songs pop up once in a while on my iTunes, which is fun. So can't wait to talk to Pete Rock as well. And you know what? Thanks to Daniel Biss for that conversation. And you know, we've been very, I think we've been pretty objective to have Sandak and Murphy and Biss. Some people text in saying Biss is just talking points. But I don't agree. What I heard was a frustrated yet sincere tone from Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on the show a couple times. He was on our first show. And I like that he can explain it. I mean, the idea that these bills are not perfect. And that's what I think people don't understand, or politicians take advantage of that. At the end of the day, these laws and bills, and they're written by people. There are always going to be things that aren't. And just listening to Daniel say, if you go a little deeper, they're paying more. You know, maybe they're not paying the full steep, because this is that kind of pension cliff kind of thing, where next year or this year's payment for police and fire is the cliff. So they're trying to make that cliff more of a ramp.
Yeah.
But they're still continuing to pay. So it's not like, no, it's not the old days like the pension holiday where it's like, we're going to take 5 years off. You know, we're going to take 5 years off and figure it out later. No, the idea being that I don't know what the number is, we can't spike into hundreds of millions of dollars, $220 million or whatever right now. And that's what his point is. He's saying that at some point, humans have to compromise and figure that out, because as you see with Governor Rauner, which is a full veto of that bill, there's a lot of people and a lot of Chicagoans that are going to be paying a lot more money if the alternative happens, meaning property tax increase again. And I don't know about you, but we just had one.
I don't want that.
And so it just gets to a certain point where it's like, you know, if the choice on the table is ramp or pass the expenses on to you, you know what? I'll take the ramp. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest tonight is coming to town to play a show at the Mid this Saturday night. He's one of the best DJs working in trance and house music, and his name is Paul Oakenfold.
Once again, I find myself with my friends. Dancing the night away, it's like the party never ends. Then again, we don't want it to stop, because tonight's the night. It goes sweatbox, laser beam, flashing lights. Wild cards, men from Mars, dressed in stars and stripes. Hectic, electric, ladies of the evening. Drinking booze and mashing to the music, I could do anything. Freaky deaky stars, speckles and pink butterflies. And life is nice, so nice. I walk into a club and I found paradise. I'm seeing stars, I can't believe my eyes.
Seeing stars.
Oh my, starry eyes, surprise. Sundown to sunrise, dance all night. We gonna dance all night, dance all night to this DJ. I should go dance all night to this DJ. Oh my, starry eyes, surprise. Sundown to sunrise, dance all night. We gonna dance all night.
your sugar. Dance all night to this DJ. Dance all night to this DJ. I love a dance all night to this DJ.
Paul Oakenfold has a new album coming out this summer called Pop Killer. He's been around music his whole life, from the early days as a label rep to his days as a producer for U2, Madonna, just to name a few, to his DJ work taking on trance and electronic music, taking it mainstream. Oakenfold is a true pioneer who finds himself among the greatest DJs of all time, and it is my pleasure to have Paul Oakenfold as my guest tonight on The Download. Paul Oakenfold, thanks for being here.
Well, that's some introduction. Thank you very much, sir.
I mentioned that you grew up in music. Talk about not only, as a childhood, how you were at first shown music, but also your first forays into DJing.
Well, I mean, yeah, just to give you a little bit of an intro, my father was a musician, so you're right, I grew up around it. Many musicians would come over, hang out at the house, so I was always around it. I then got into a band myself and at 16, and I thought the band were a good band. To be honest, we weren't, and that's what led me into DJing, really. And from then onwards, I've always loved playing and sharing music, and DJing was the way forward for me. Even though I do a lot of production, make a lot of my own music, and play a lot of my own music, I always enjoy DJing and sharing other people's music as well.
Mm-hmm. And there, the story goes that in the late 70s, you started DJing and spinning funk.
Strangely enough, funk, American funk, was very popular in Britain. So at 16, 17, 18, when I was getting really into music, that's the sound that was popular where I was living in South London.
When you came here, you spent some time in New York City in the 80s. You weren't necessarily, came here to be an artist, but you started by working in the music industry. Talk about that.
I was working with Profile Records. I'd run DMC, Def Jam, had Public Enemy and Beastie Boys. And so I was very much within in music on that side of it. I was very much all about hip-hop music at that time. So I was very honestly really into it.
You've made your name as being a DJ, being a house musician, also electronic music, trance. When did you make that transition? I mean, you had a life that you were into funk music. You also, spent time in hip-hop with the band you just mentioned. When did you make that transition into more of dance music?
Well, in 87, we went to an island called Ibiza.
Of course.
And that's where the birth of electronic music really happened. In myself and a few colleagues, we went to that island. We got really into the spirit and the energy. We came back, all started clubs in London, and that was the real beginning of Acid House that turned into what we now know as electronic music / EDM.
You have made your name at clubs like Ministry of Sound and Cream in London. You know, it was all about the residency. Talk about the residency when it comes to DJs, because that's something that you and your career, you've really reached out towards. You're not just a DJ that tours around. You've really sort of given yourself to the idea of the residency.
Yeah, and the true residency is someone who's there every week and for literally for the year. And that's when you really mold a club in terms of the music, the sound. You get regulars who come back and like what you're doing, and you play much longer sets, 3 to 4 hour sets, where you can take people on a journey, and you establish a sound for that residency. And that's what I learned very early on when I had my residencies at Ministry of Sound and Cream. And then when I came to America and I did my residency in Vegas from 2008, for 2.5 years I was there, and every Saturday, forming a sound and a whole look on what we were doing at the Palms Casino back in the day.
Yeah. You mentioned that. You mentioned, being able to craft a journey for the person in the club, for the listener. That's really what electronic music does well, is putting together a long set.
It really does.
And what draws you to that? Because that seems to be different than maybe, a single here and a single there. A set actually is all about the journey.
Yeah. Well, it's the structure, arrangement. It's the true art of a DJ. It's really what DJ's really all about, and how he can take you on a musical journey. Some tracks some you don't. You find yourself in a place where you're like, wow, I never thought I'd be dancing to this record. There's the climax. There's the whole structure of that period, whether it's 3 or 4 hours, is really important. And for the clubber to let go and feel the music rather than just listening to the individual tracks, that's what a true DJ does. I mean, that's what true club DJs do anyway.
We're speaking with Paul Oakenfold. I mean, you're a legend in the game. Do you miss that intimacy? I mean, you're going to be playing the mid this weekend, but I mean, for you, you can play, I mean, at the biggest festivals where there's 75,000, 100,000 people there. Do you miss the intimacy of those early days of at Cream and that idea of building a set and having the clubber have a journey?
Yeah, listen, I'm very fortunate that, you know, and I enjoy playing the big festivals and the bigger gigs, but if I had to choose one, it would be a small club, great sound system, wonderful crowd in a dark room and playing 3 or 4 hours to 500 people and really taking you on a musical journey and just all of us getting lost in music and having a wonderful time and feeling and expressing yourself. That's what it's really all about.
DJs now, electronic EDM DJs, you know, they can play Spring Awakenings coming up here at Soldier Field. Like, you're playing bigger and bigger and bigger stages. It's not about the club anymore. But you were one of the first DJs to actually get out of the club and get on stage when you're warming up for a U2 or a Madonna and getting in front of huge audiences. How did you make that transition as a DJ?
I got asked to support both those acts that you named, and they came to me and were like, would you, you know, want to support us? So I started working on special sets for those guys. You know what I mean? U2 is obviously a rock band, so I'm not going to play underground electronic music. So I did a lot of remixes with Chili Peppers, Lenny Kravitz, bands like that, with electronic undertones, but still keeping the integrity of the artist. And with Madonna, when I was working with her with production and a lot of the other pop, more familiar pop acts, Justin Timberlake, those kind of mainstream acts, I would have a lot of electronic overtones, so it would work really well. You'd know it was me, but you'd still keep, as I said, the integrity of the artist, and it would work as me being a support act for those artists on tour.
You know, you're one of the, as I mentioned, one of the pioneers, but you're also one of the giants of this musical genre. And right now, you're seeing such a transition where DJs are, like I said, I mean, they're headlining huge festivals. Was it difficult for you to go out of the DJ booth and get on stage and have to do that kind of show, the show that's the more prominent kind of show that we see in EDM today?
Well, those shows of today, I mean, you only, first and foremost, these EDM shows, you only get an hour. Right. And I think the audience just want to hear the obvious big tunes. It's difficult to do something within an hour. So, I mean, it's a completely different focus now when you're playing EDCs or the bigger events, Soldier Fields, etc.
But there's so much more that goes into the stagecraft of that. You know, I saw Dash Berlin not too long ago, and it was just lights and sound and everything everywhere.
It's all about the production and just getting to the big tunes. So, you know, the crowd jumping up and down. Mm-hmm. There's not really a moment to take them on a journey on those big events.
Right. We've seen with some of the big acts, the DJ acts, your peers, your contemporaries, you're seeing some of them. Avicii said he's going to retire, that at 28 years old, that he wants out of the game because he can't really keep up with the party lifestyle that surrounds the music. For you, how do you deal with that?
Well, because I don't party as much. That's pretty much the answer. I mean, look, it's a fine line. It's important to take care of yourself when you are on the road as much as my fellow DJs are, but I think it's all about balance. You know, it's wonderful. We're very lucky to travel the world and meet and experience so many things, but you've obviously, to be able to do that, it takes a certain person, I think, to be able to live on the road and every day get on a plane, go to a different city, check in a hotel, be up all night and do the same the next day. It takes a certain person, I think, who can cope with that. And maybe a lot of the younger DJs who are getting into it don't understand that yet. That comes with experience and knowledge of knowing how to tour, like anything, really.
Right, right. Like any musician,
the
right?
Experience really does come into it when you know how to move a dance floor, to knowing when to play a certain track, the arrangement of how you put your music together, and you're not just there to entertain. You're also there to educate. It's not like I'm going to play all the same music you're going to hear on the radio. What's the point of booking me? You might as well just turn on the radio. So that's the responsibility that comes with the performance. And, you know, and the crowd that come are very, very important. They're very savvy. They don't want to just hear the same old tracks. I mean, you know, there's no point in that. I think times have changed now, and we're all looking for a bit more.
For you, I mean, you got a new record coming out here, Pop Killer. The new single is coming out too, You Are, which is with Brooklyn and Amber Shepherd. I'm interested in how your music has evolved over the decades, because, you know, you've done everything from great trance music. You've done soundtracks for The Matrix 2 and Born Identity and those kind of movies. Where is your music evolving to? Because we see on the radio now, summer tracks are almost exclusively EDM DJs like and producers like Skrillex and Diplo and other people like that. I mean, do you see yourself moving in that direction where you're going to be more pop music than you have been in the past?
The thing is, it takes me a lot longer to make artist records. So my first artist record, I had a top five pop record in America and in England with Starry Eyed Surprise.
Right, of course.
I then did Ready, Steady, Go. I recorded Faster Kill Pussycat with Brittany Murphy. What's kind of changed for me is I grew up, as I said at the beginning of the interview, on songs. My father was very much in a contemporary rock band that was based around songs and great singers. And that's very difficult for me to do because I'm not a songwriter. As much as I've learned to write songs, I still don't class myself as a great songwriter, and I certainly can't sing. So that's why it takes me a lot longer to make artist records, because I do a hell of a lot of collaborations. And that's the basis and the soul of my artist albums. So that hasn't changed over the 10, 12 years of making artist albums for me. What's changed is pop electronic music has been thrust into the mainstream world, and it's become pop music. So that's the difference. So when my album does come out, my third artist album, it's no different in respect of its great singers, its wonderful songs, and its cutting-edge beats. What's changed, as I said, is we now live in the pop world. So it will be perceived as more of a mainstream record.
But you're absolutely right. You've been doing it all along. I mean, as we mentioned at the beginning, you're a pioneer. Paul Oakenfold, DJ extraordinaire, will be on stage at The Mid on Saturday night here in Chicago. The Mid is over on Halstead and Fullerton. That's a great club.
It's a wonderful club, and it really allows you as the DJ to go play underground music, be really creative, and it's one of my favorites in America, so I'm very very lucky that they've invited me back, you know, again and again, and I'm so looking forward to it. I've got some great new music to share with everyone.
How great is that to see Paul Oakenfold at The Mid? Paul Oakenfold, thanks so much for being my guest tonight on The Download.
Paul, much appreciated, and of course to the listener, much appreciated.
Very excited to talk to Pete Rock, who's coming up here after the news. Pete Rock and CL Smooth, like I said, the main ingredient. What I loved about those guys, it was a really great sound. It's like a jazz rap. He really was able to weave jazz tracks into the raps they were doing back in the mid-90s. But there was a lot of NBA references. So there was always like references. And they're from New York, so there'd be references to Michael Jordan and the Bulls all the time. But then there'd always be like New York Knicks references for guys that weren't that big. So I don't know the line, but there was a line about Allen Houston, New York Knicks shooting guard from like 1994, like, you know, getting used to it, shooting threes like my name is Allen Houston, you know, or something like that. And I always thought that was great. I'm like, nobody cares about Allen Houston, but it's awesome that you got him in your rap. So I'll ask him about it. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Koppel. Well, we heard earlier this hour Paul Oakenfold. So to go from one of the best DJs in electronica to one of the best DJs in hip-hop, my guest tonight is none other
than Pete Rock.
I reminisce for a spell, or shall I say think back 22 years ago to keep it on track. The birth of a child on the 8th of October. A toast, but my granddaddy came sober. Count all the fingers and the toes. Now I suppose you hope the little black boy grows. 18 years younger than my mama, but I really got beatings with the girl of trauma. In single parenthood, there I stood. By the time she was 21, had another one. This one's a girl, let's name her Pam. Same father as the first, but you don't give a damn. Irresponsible, plain not thinking. Papa said chill, but the brother keep winking. Still he won't down, you would tear out your hide. On your side while the baby make a slide. But mama got wise to the game. The youngest of five kids, hun, here it is. After 10 years without no spouse, mama's getting married in the house. Listen, positive over negative, for the woman a master. Mother queen's rise in the chapter. Deja vu, tell you what I'm gonna do when they reminisce over you, my God.
The Boogie Down Bronx-born Pete Rock is considered to be one of the most influential hip-hop producers and DJs of all time. He was part of the duo Pete Rock and CL Smooth, and he's worked with artists like Biggie, Nas, Public Enemy, Kanye. But seriously, I can use the next 20 minutes to list every big name Pete Rock has ever worked with. He's sold millions of albums. He's won Grammys. He's going to be at the Promontory spinning in Hyde Park this Saturday night. That's tomorrow. To quote the last line of Pete Rock's amazing bio, he tours on 6 of 7 continents. And when there's a party on Antarctica, Pete Rock will either be asked to spin or he'll be played by the DJ who does. Pete Rock, welcome to the download.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for being here. I guess we start with the news. Just in the last couple of weeks, there was talk of a West Coast tour, a reuniting of you and CL Smooth, Pete Rock and CL Smooth. Talk about that. I mean, that's a big deal.
Well, that's actually something that's very exciting to talk about. And when we come out to perform, you know, together as a unit, it's always good to see how the fans react to us, you know, seeing us on stage together, rocking and doing all the, you know, all the songs from Mike Mack and Soul Brother, The Main Ingredient, and All Sold Out, you know, even throwing in some stuff that we've been working on our own. But it's a pleasure to, you know, be back out there, you know, doing what we love doing.
Well, for you, I mean, as I mentioned, you've worked with so many different artists. You've collaborated, you've produced, you've worked on people's albums. What is it that makes the relationship with CL Smooth so special?
I think because of the music we made and how we gelled together so, you know, so greatly. It was just like a match made in heaven, you know, in music. And I believe with anyone, once you catch a vibe with a person and begin to you know, practice and put forth that talent, you know, great things can happen, and that's what was happening with me and CL, and I believe it hasn't diminished. It's still there.
And we're talking about 20-plus years now. For you, reflect on that time in hip-hop, because that was such a special time, the mid-90s, 20 years ago now, working on sort of the jazz hip-hop stuff that you guys were doing. But there's so much energy and so much lasting impact to the artists that were coming out of that time. Why do you think that is?
I think because we had a lot of good things to say, and we had originality in the music, and you can actually learn from what we were doing. You know what I'm saying? Even kids can listen to our music and not be offended, you know? Mm-hmm. So with that said, I just think that separates that era from any other era. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You've been able to put out your own music, both as a rapper and as a producer, but you've also put out instrumentals. Talk about your relationship with an MC. I mean, obviously you've had that relationship with CL Smooth, but as a DJ, what do you look for when you work with a rapper and an MC?
Just personality and flow, you know, basically his flow ethic, how he flows over music. You know, it's very important that a producer and an MC have a great relationship, because once you have that magical bond, there's nothing that can change it or stop it. That's the feeling that I always live for.
I'm just curious, do you come up with the track and then you want the MC to flow over the track, or as a producer, are you thinking about how that MC flows and then matching the music to him or her?
I do it both ways. I do it that way mostly, where I'm in my head, I'm imagining a person rapping over this beat and how they would sound over it. You know, that's only an opinion in your head, but if you can execute and make it happen, that's even greater. And, you know, if the artist even likes the idea, that's even 1,000% better, because, you know, you had the idea in your head already and not thinking or knowing if the artist is going to like it or not. So it's always a plus when it's a positive outcome.
We're talking with hip-hop DJ Pete Rock. You know, and I call you a hip-hop DJ, but you've worked across genres. I mean, you've done, you know, done everything from working with some of the greatest artists of all time to rock musicians, to singers, to, you know,
exactly.
I mean, you've done a ton of stuff. Talk about that. I mean, is it easy for you as a DJ to sort of shift from one genre of music to another? Or is there some stuff that is more of a challenge?
If you love what you do and you're very, very passionate about what you do, and if music makes you feel good, then anything's possible. I always rode with that for years and years and years, and I felt like passion overrules everything. When you know, because no matter what the game may seem like, the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs, and you're still rolling with the punches, should tell people a lot about how dedicated a person is to what he does.
So we should expect that Pete Rock country album pretty soon? Like I said, I mean, 22 years plus of working in the business, working as a producer and a DJ, you've obviously worked with, and like I said, I mentioned a ton of them, and it would take too long to list every single artist, but it's pretty much every single artist that's ever lived. But another thing that you do, which is really interesting, is you do work with a lot of young artists and young MCs that are coming up in the game. It almost becomes a source of pride for you to mold and to work with unknowns who are just starting their career. Why do you do that?
Because I feel I'm in love with what I do. I love making music and being creative with new people. And the young guys who I like J. Cole or Kendrick Lamar, Joey Badass, you know, Action Bronson, I believe that these cats are the future. You know, A$AP Ferg and A$AP Rocky and all these, the new guys is what's happening right now. And I just want to be in the mix.
Yeah.
And let them cats know that, hey, man, look, I got heat, fire. You know what I mean? That's really
well for you. I mean, it's one of the challenges about, you know, with working with young artists like that. You've worked with Biggie and, you know, Nas, as I mentioned, Kanye West, and there's a certain mutual respect in the sense that, you know, they're working with Pete Rock. So for young kids who are just getting into recording or getting into, maybe this is their first foray into a bigger stage and they're working with you, what are some of the challenges? What's that like for you as a producer?
I look at it as just like spreading knowledge. I don't look at it as a challenge. I look at it as spreading knowledge and giving people advice and tell them about the do's, don'ts, you know, just kind of rolling with it like that, because, you know, it's all about learning, you know what I'm saying? Getting it. And if you can get, you know, the people that you're working with to listen to you, even regardless of my track record or whatever, if the person's ears is open to learn, then, you know, that I'm more than willing to tell it all.
By working with a lot of the youngsters and the new wave of MCs and hip-hop artists, where is hip-hop going? I mean, we've seen a real, you know, in Chicago we have Chance the Rapper and sort of a move back to conscious rap, but an independent type of move away from major labels and that kind of thing. But we've also seen here in Chicago a movement to drill, you know, the idea of a more drill sound. So where do you see hip-hop moving from your vantage point?
I see hip-hop moving in an independent field where people want the chance to make their own music, own their masses, but there's a lot that goes into, you know, that process. You know, you have to learn the business, you know what I mean? And that's important that that people learn the business and get smart, you know, figure out how to do things and be successful at it.
Well, you're going to be spinning this weekend tomorrow at Promontory in Hyde Park. Great club. We just had Paul Oakenfold on, and he just talked about, you know, he's playing this weekend as well at the Mid, and he was talking about, from a dance DJ's perspective, really taking the club on a journey. You know, he likes to spread out like 2-3 hours and be able to, and that's what he believes DJs are supposed to do. From your vantage point, when you're going to play the Promontory tomorrow night, what can we expect? And is that a similar sort of aesthetic for a hip-hop DJ taking that on a journey?
I like to play like stuff that people remember from, you know, from soul R&B, you know, from the 70s and 80s. I like playing a lot of 80s soft rock that were hit records that were danceable. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of gets the crowd going and, you know, gets the the people of age, remembering, you know, those great songs. And then, you know, just kind of sneaking in little things here and there, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's basically what the trick is to covering every genre of music in a classy way where people are dancing and you're not, nothing's, you know, nothing's out of the ordinary when they're listening to it to be DJing.
Well, tomorrow night at Promontory, Pete Rock will be on stage spinning, one of the legendary DJs in hip hop. Tremendous news that Pete Rock and CL Smooth getting back together for the tour on the West Coast. We hope it comes to Chicago soon. Pete Rock, thank you so much for being my guest tonight on the download. We appreciate it.
Oh, man, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Wow. Paul Oakenfold and Pete Rock. Two of the best DJs to have ever lived. I've got plans tomorrow night, but I'm like, well, could I make it to Pete Rock for the first part of his hip hop set and then end up a little EDM on the backside? I don't know. It'd be pretty fun, but I don't think it's possible.
No?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about crisscrossing the city. I could be like Ray Liotta from Goodfellas. Then I had to stir the sauce. Then I had to go get the guns. Then I had to go get the drugs. Yeah, or not. Coming up, today was a historic day for American Japan relations. We had the president in Hiroshima, which was great to see. And I saw the whole sort of speech. And, you know, it's interesting because Chicago has such a tremendous Japanese population here. I mean, if you go out in the regions, if you go out Arlington Heights, that area, Glenview, a big Japanese population. And also Chicago's Jackson Park plays a huge role. I didn't know this. We're gonna have a little history lesson coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. It plays a huge role in U.S.-Japan relations with the Garden of the Phoenix. And so we'll talk about that garden and what the plans are for that garden with the gentleman from 120. Let's see what I've got it here. I'm sorry, I'm messing up the from Project 120 Chicago. It's coming up, Robert Carr. I'm excited to talk with him because this is going to be what they have plans for to sort of spruce up Jackson Park, but also an art installation from Yoko Ono that's coming in. So we'll talk with Robert about the Garden of the Phoenix and what the plans are coming up here for the summer, fall. And then coming up at 10 o'clock, it's Frying Pan. Steve Gadlin is back. Steve Gadlin has said that be prepared tonight for a winner. And usually he says that. I mean, he says it every time. But there's something about his tone and his confidence and his swagger tonight that he says, you know what? It's not going to be as fun because I'm telling you, it's not going to be as fun because everyone's going to love my idea. And he knows that I love it when, you know, people don't. So we'll see. Maybe we'll have a turn. Maybe there'll be a turning point in the frying pan. Tonight might be the night that Steve Gadlin wins. Every sitcom, drama, show in any form, at some point the main character has to win. Maybe tonight Steve Gadlin's sort of season one cliffhanger. We'll see. I'm excited. 10 o'clock here. And what a better segment to have 10 o'clock on a Friday night. And the rain has stopped. I feel bad for everyone as a Beyonce. You don't?
No.
They paid so much money for those tickets.
Yeah.
I was at a school fundraiser, and it was a silent auction. This was on Saturday. And they had two tickets to Beyonce. And I was like, oh, man. And I don't even care. But I was like, that's, you know, because a silent auction always tricks you into thinking you're going to get a better value because it starts a little lower than what you think. So
yeah,
you're like,
it comes up 20, yeah, and you put 25.
Yeah, except this is like, each ticket's $180. Mm-hmm. But they're like, for $300, you know, you can get a pair of tickets to Beyonce. And I'm like, And I fiddled around with it and on my phone, and I was about to auction. I went to look at it like an hour later, and it was already up to like $600, $700. So I was like, and I was thinking, in my head, I was thinking, the Soldier Field, the traffic, what if it rains? Hey, I was right. And I got a show to do. I didn't even know it was on a Friday.
Well, I think she's playing tomorrow, too.
I know,
right?
But I think the tickets were for Friday. Yeah. So it's hilarious. I'm like, yay, we got it. I got $900.
want tickets. Oh, I can't go because we got to do the frying pan at 10 o'clock. Ugh. Hey, big night tonight. I'm excited. Craig Collins is going to be sitting in for Nick tonight, 2 o'clock.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Craig Collins, of course, Patty Vasquez's producer and longtime producer. He's going to be in. And he's got some good stuff tonight. I was just talking to him in the commercial break. He is going to have an update on Mark Carman's love story.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing love story.
Mm.
Yeah.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, well, he kind of started it off, if you listened on Wednesday when he filled in for Patty. It was fun listening to him talk about getting back, getting the right apps and everything because he's getting ready to date. And, you know, the story continues. So that's coming up with Mark. I think Mark, I'm not sure. I think Mark will be here.
Yeah, Mark will be.
Yeah. And Craig.
It. Yeah, how about that?
It's so
that?
Great. I got to figure out how to listen. Because by the time, I mean, this has been such a long day, I feel like I'm not even going to make it to the frying pan.
get a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah, maybe, and, yeah. Know. Maybe, or I'll just go to Billy Goat till closing.
I just saw on Facebook Live, I saw that Mike Parker.
Oh, they're having their party?
Legendary TV newsman from CBS is over there.
So is tonight his last night?
I'm not sure when his last day is.
Because
but
that was just announced,
right? Yeah, right. It seemed quick. It wasn't like the 3-year goodbye to Ron Majors.
There were a lot of people at that party last night at Harry Carey's. There was a big party for Ron Majors last night at Harry Carey's. We can't go to any of these parties. But it was all the
Were meeting. We invited?
We weren't invited. But we still couldn't go. but yeah, it. I heard it was a great time, and everybody was there.
Ron Majors is the best.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I must. You, as you know, as a listener, I mean, I could be a sarcastic little punk. You know, like I can. I you know, it comes to politics and others. I like to you know try to find the sort of weak point and expose it. But with Ron Majors, there's nothing to say.
No,
I can't think of anything. He's the best. He and Carol Marine, they're the best. And it's sort of. You know, that's quite a legacy. And like I think I said that night on the carryout, it's like to be in that business, the 10 o'clock news business, local TV,
mm-hmm.
They make movies about that stuff. Will Ferrell starred in a movie called Anchorman that was making fun of local TV. For Ron Majors to be in that business and to somehow continue to have ultimate respect from everybody, it's pretty impressive. I mean, that's a mark of a true talent. So, all right, coming up, we'll talk about Jackson Park. Stay with us. Yeah, so download here on WGN Radio. Quick correction. I said that Craig was in for Nick tonight. He's not in for Nick. Usually it's Bubala. It was Bubala's spot. Nick doesn't do Friday nights. So that's what.
So Bubala's in from Patty and...
Well, Patty's on at 11, so it was at 2 o'clock. So anyway, I just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you.
My bad. We're all good. We good, Pete? We good?
We're good.
Coming up, 10 o'clock, The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. Can't wait for that. 312-981-7200. But now, you know, today President Obama made history by visiting Hiroshima. This, of course, a huge day for Japanese-American relations. Both countries have been allies for years, but obviously it wasn't always that way. The Chicagoland area has a tremendous Japanese population. And did you know that Jackson Park played an important role in the U.S.-Japan relations? And I mean, Chicago plays a huge role. Coming this fall, Chicago's Jackson Park, particularly the Garden of the Phoenix, will include a new art installation called Sky Landing by a little unknown artist named Yoko Ono. I don't know much about her. The plans for the garden and the installation are being put together by Project 120 Chicago and the Garden of the Phoenix Foundation. They just launched an online timeline for the garden revamp today. And Bob Carr, who's the president of Project 120 Chicago, joins me now. Bob, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Justin. Thank you very much.
So this is a big deal. I mean, is it a coincidence that you guys launched your sort of online timeline on the same day that the president was in Japan?
You know, it's not a coincidence that things are happening at this time. However, I think in just where we are in U.S.-Japan relations, looking back at the history, and we're now 70 years out after the war, yeah. And we look back here in Chicago over 120 years now when we first connected, not just as a city with a country, but we had the World's Fair here. And nations from all around the world came, and Japan played a big role in the fair. And it was a big, big step for Japan that had just been opened up by the United States in the middle of the 1850s. So yeah. Looking back, it's not a coincidence, but yet, you know, history and past, present, future, it's sometimes funny coincidences.
That's how Jackson Park kind of came to be. Talk yeah. about the World's Fair, Jackson Park, and how it plays a role in Japan-American relations.
Sure. You know, Chicago had the big fire in 1871, right? And for Chicago and the United States, the 1893 World's Fair was a big stepping stone. It was our time to demonstrate, you know, where we were as a country and to the world.
Yeah, right.
But it was also the first time that countries were invited to do their own pavilions and play a big role in the planning and participate in a big way. Chicago is one of the biggest World's Fair, most successful in the world. Japan was just a new country to the world at that time. 40 years prior, it was opened up after 250 years of isolation to the world, and this was its opportunity to demonstrate that it had over a 1,000-year history, and that it had also gone from pretty much an agriculture country to what it would eventually become sort of a world power at that time. So presenting itself at the fair was a big deal, and a lot of planning went into it. In Chicago, Daniel Burnham and Olmsted looked to the Wooded Island, which the Japanese wanted to build on, and in the middle of all of these neoclassic buildings, the Museum of Science and mm-hmm. Industry being from the fair, you can imagine all these white European buildings. Japan saw itself sitting on this island in the middle of them, which is the Wooded Island, which is there right. today. So there is a Japanese garden there today. Chicago, the South Park Commission, these parks, Jackson Park, Midway Plaisance, Washington Park, were designed by Frederick Olmsted, the father of American landscape architecture, as a single park system, largest ever that he designed. And he was also with Burnham, you know, working on the fair. But so make a long story short, we look back 120 years and where Japan was, their aspirations to build a Phoenix Pavilion on the Wooded Island, which it did. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful structure modeled after a 1,000-year-old pavilion in Japan, which still exists. It was very successful introducing itself to people like Frank Lloyd Wright and others who were influenced right. by it. But most importantly, I think it's the South Park's commissioner and Daniel Burnham and Olmsted who agreed that this should be a permanent fixture in Chicago. And we accepted it as a gift as the citizens of Chicago and agreed that we'd keep it in perpetuity. And that it would be a place where people can come learn about Japan and about the rest of the world. And what we're finding today with just this combination of President Obama visiting Hiroshima, looking back at history straight in the face, as he said, and us looking to the future with Yoko Ono to say this isn't just peace among two nations, it's peace among all people. And it has to happen.
I think that's such a great way to put it. I mean, this was a gift that was given to the city of Chicago, and it's our job as citizens to sort of keep that gift in perpetuity. Right. Let's talk about that, because what does it take to maintain a Japanese garden?
Good question.
You know, like what does it take?
Yeah, so it takes a lot. It takes, first of all, understanding of what it is, right?
Right.
Wooded Island is 15 acres, and so we received this gift, and I don't think we knew what to do with it exactly. Jackson Park was transformed from a what they called the White City, and all these neoclassic buildings came down except for a few, and the Museum of Science and Industry and the Phoenix Pavilion were going to be the only buildings that were going to be permanent fixtures, which they were. So for 50 years, this building existed until it, unfortunately, in 1946, even after surviving the war, because of arson, was lost. It was actually a couple of young kids. It wasn't even an act of violence against Japan or aggression. But what does it take? So by the 1930s, the building became a little bit degraded, you know, four decades in, not knowing how to work with it. So people rallied around. The Art Institute of Chicago, at that time, the head of the institute, Mr. Kelly, and then the Park District head, Donahue, and others all got around and said, we have to save this. So it wasn't just the Park District and these institutions, but it was actually a family, the Osato family. It was a biracial family that came together, and they took on the maintenance of this building. So WPA money was used at that time. So remember, it's the Depression in the 1930s. The Park District got a huge grant under the WPA, the New Deal under Eisenhower, and the first monies put towards a restoration or a park project was towards this pavilion. So what we had then for about 6 years was a real celebration of Japan. At the same time, our relations with Japan were going south, to be honest, and obviously led to Pearl Harbor, which we can go into all sorts of details. But what does it take? It takes a community to get around our parks to begin with. When you have fixtures, assets like this, they have to be used and are often built for specific uses. This one was a gift from the city, and it was really about then our caring for something that we weren't familiar with, which I think was the purpose.
Well, you know, beyond the pavilion, when I say, oh, it's the Garden of the Phoenix, the Japanese garden, what usually, I mean, you spent time in Japan, like what does that usually mean? What is a Japanese garden entail?
Sure. They're often, it's nature. Well, anytime you talk about a landscape, it's something that we've touched. It's a designed landscape, right? But for hundreds of years, the Japanese gardens have evolved to be sort of microcosms of nature. So they're not to show a dominance of nature, yet they are fully dominating nature, meaning they're taking a pine tree and they're sculpting it over centuries, literally centuries. We've been fortunate. We have, you know, many trees in Jackson Park that are 100 years old, but they grow freely, right? And they're pruned and keep healthy and so forth. But there's an intent, a design intent with these gardens, as you'd find in English gardens and so forth. But they tend to be rambling. They have stone, you know, they have stone ponds, moon bridges. They have, most importantly, and this is what Frank Lloyd Wright found in the pavilion that he encountered at 26, and it's true with the built structures of Japan as well as landscapes. There are these pathways of discovery. So each and around every turn, it opens up into a new view.
Yeah.
So we sit in this 15-acre island, and we get to this 2-acre area of the Japanese garden. But it what that garden is really referencing is the hundreds of acres around it. Jackson Park's 540 acres.
Right.
So you look across a lagoon to another area that has trees. All of that plays a part. So
that's
from
wonderful.
2 acres, it's quite delightful.
That seems...
A lot of people would say, like Alfred Caldwell Lily Pool that we have here on the north side, it's just beautiful, enchanting little space, but yet just, you know, it moves you and speaks volumes about nature. We have that there in the Japanese garden.
And this is just south of the Museum of Science Industry.
That's
right. This is right where that pavilion... So talk about, I mean, the revitalization, because it's that time, and that's what you're doing with the Garden of the Phoenix Foundation and Project 120 Chicago, where it's essentially time for us to sort of revitalize.
Right. So people would ask, you know, what does Project 120 mean, right?
Right.
So it is a project. It's work. It's good work. It's work we can all do together. But the 120 was really coming at a time when we were working with the Park District. We're a 501c3 partner with the Park District to develop and implement plans that revitalize Olmsted's Park. Coming together, we were looking back 120 years. We were seeing this as an evolution and a commitment that we have inherited. And we can look to Olmsted and Burnham, of course. But where are we? And to ask the question, 120 what? It's 120 years, and it's the idea that we have future generations.
Mm-hmm.
Public spaces we can't take for granted. We have to care for them. And it's been decades since these parks have received any care. We visit wonderful parks on the north side, Lincoln Park, great example. But it's amazing how, if I take Jackson Park, for example, there's a 40-acre swath of land that at one time from 1956 to 1974 had Nike missiles. I don't know if you knew that. There were 22 installations around Chicago, and there was a whole Nike missile base that was in the park. And
it that park is so fascinating to me. It is. There's so much history.
So when you think about an Obama library, which is great, and you think about telling our American stories, and we've got Olmsted and Burnham, and we've got urban planning and landscape Frank Lloyd Wright. But we can't forget that there's 70 years of history of truly African-American history, too.
Yeah, of course.
And that history, those stories have to be told, just as much as how this park was created in the Japanese story and how much we can focus on that tonight. But you have a first sitting African-American president. You have a historical moment like Hiroshima. You have a community rallying around these wonderful parks, asking questions about what are they? What are they to become? They're used. They're wonderful parks, and they can be improved. They can be some of the most beautiful landscapes in the city.
Quickly, let's talk about what we can expect from Sky Landing. That's going to be a big deal that comes here in the fall. Yeah. Yoko Ono, of course, the artist. Why Sky Landing and why here?
Sure. So Yoko Ono became familiar with this project when we were celebrating the 120th anniversary of the Phoenix Pavilion and the
2013
park.
Right,
and she was born in 1933. She at a very young age prior to the war came to San Francisco, lived here. Since then she's had one foot in both cultures, and we know her history. We often know it as the Beatles and so forth, but long before the Beatles and John Lennon,
right,
she was an artist in her own right. And at the age of 20 she came here in 1953, same year as the peace treaty of that began with Japan post-war, and she eventually became an artist in her own right and used art to talk about, you know, the world and to provoke ideas. And what she's done is she's come to Chicago, learned about this history very quickly, and she's looking at this as an opportunity to take this phoenix, which went up in ashes. She did a ground healing ceremony last year, which the mayor and others, everyone attended, and it was an opportunity with these landscapes that have gone in to prepare the site for a new era. And to say, you know what, we can learn something from our past, and we should do something. So what's growing out of this, the ashes of this phoenix, is a beautiful lotus. And it's not an object that you look at. It's something that you walk through. It's a gate to the future.
That's great.
Yeah. Right? Right?
You got me,
right?
Man. You got me. Sky Landing will be this fall. Yoko Ono's piece with the lotus.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this, you can, where can we see the online timeline? I mean, I saw it, but where does it live?
So, of course, we've got Facebook and the website. So it's gardenofthephoenix.org. You go there, timeline. It's interactive. We've spent the last 3 years working with the Art Institute and Chicago Public Library. Anywhere and everywhere there was something about the history of this 120 years of Chicago and Japan. It's online now. It's interactive. You can bounce around. And also, you're welcome to tell your own story on that site.
Bob Carr is the president of Project 120 Chicago, who, in conjunction with the Garden of the Phoenix Foundation, is working on revitalizing the Garden of the Phoenix in Jackson Park. Bob, thanks for being here, and
you
got to come back and tell us how it's going when it hits the fall.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. I gotta say, I love that conversation about the Garden of the Phoenix.
How about it?
You know, I didn't know much about it, and I was like, well, it's an interesting tie-in with the president being in Japan today. And I like Jackson Park. I'd like to know more. But the concept of a Japanese garden having paths and design that is meant for the path to end, to be able to see different parts of the park like that, and sort of this purposeful design of a park, is something that I just find fascinating. Call me a hopeless romantic. Maybe that's not. But, you know, where I grew up, I was very into nature. I don't think I was as a kid. I just was around it.
Yeah.
But, like, nothing against, you know, in Wonder Lake, Illinois, nothing against the Harrison Benwell. It was a great, great place. But there wasn't a lot of design put into it. It was sort of cut out in a little area. You got to a bridge to go over the creek. That bridge, there wasn't a tremendous amount of upkeep to that bridge. And that was about it. You know, the idea of having in Chicago a Japanese garden that is not just sort of a copycat That's what's really important about this. The Garden of the Phoenix, it's not sort of like, you know, it'd be great, like a bonsai tree. This was a gift from the Japanese. You know, this was a gift to say, mm-hmm. hey, we'll do something that we have and we'll give it to you in Chicago. I think that's great. It reminds you of the scope and how global this city is and how where we live on any given day, where we live and with all the problems we have in this town, whether it be economic or, crime, violence, things of that nature, there still is this connection to history and this connection to the world. I really like that.
Those parks are beautiful. I mean, have you been to Jackson Park recently?
I haven't been recently. When Bob left, I'm like, I got to go to Jackson Park this weekend.
We're in a dog walking group where we meet like mm-hmm. every weekend and we go to different parks and we walk our dogs. And it's at like Jackson Park. It's at Washington Park. It's at Garfield Park. And you don't. I mean, you just, hear about them and you just would drive by them. But like when you're actually in the park, walking around, it's beautiful, amazing, yeah. expansive.
I mean, it's acres upon acres.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, too, that I find that's important is that we have to preserve that park. And we also not just preserve it, but we have to keep it up. Because otherwise, you can go down and be like, well, this was a Japanese garden, but now people just play basketball on it. just go down there, just garbage everywhere. No. Let's have some nice things, right? Maybe we shouldn't play basketball in the grass. I don't know. That's the first thing I learned. Ball doesn't bounce right. So, but, I've never really been a nature guy here in the city. Living in the city, it's not something that I've seeked out.
Oh, it's surprising. You seem like somebody that would.
Like a guy who would have a tent?
Maybe not. Maybe a minor nature
like I would
guy.
Have like a Swiss Army knife, a tent, maybe like a Coleman's, an old Coleman's
cooler. Yeah.
One of those lights that you wind up.
Oh yeah, I'm not seeing that much. But
that's
camping.
That's on nature.
Yeah, like just a person that likes to one with the parks.
It's really interesting because my parents are really nature. They kayak. They live in the middle of the woods. You should come up sometime. It's tremendous where they live. They live in Wisconsin. I mean, it's like a nature paradise.
Yeah,
the house is built into the aesthetic of the woods they live in. So. The animals and the deer and the turkeys and things that come up to the door.
Turkeys?
Yeah, turkeys.
Wow.
And I am the exact opposite. I moved into the urban jungle. Like, I'm like, no, nah, I'm going to live downtown. I like it. I don't need trees. I need an Old Navy. I just need to be close. I need to be close to a Starbucks and an Old Navy. I don't know what it is. I mean, there needs to be a Verizon store in every third block. When I moved, I'm like, what? There better be a Chase Bank somewhere. And then a Bank of America and a and a Fifth Third all within like a block of me.
So whenever you visit your parents, do you feel that you need, perhaps you might need a little bit more of this in your life? Or you're fine with the day and then come back into...
Well, I mean, I always enjoy visiting them and the nature is very soothing. That's very cool. Like, it's great to be out there. It's always been tough with my son because he lives here. So I kind of want him to get into nature because it's not readily available.
Yeah.
He and his school went to the Morton Arboretum just recently and for a field trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I'm like, well, what did you see? He's like, I don't know. And I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, no. It's an arboretum. Like, it's just trees. Just say the word trees. And, like, he was more interested in the bus ride there and the bus ride back.
And yeah, I'm like, so,
yeah, but when he goes out and he visits with my parents, they're very, and then I realize that
things.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. They're very good in that regard because he gets to see stuff. He goes on treasure hunts or whatever. Because it's acres of land around them. I mean, they snowshoe. Who snowshoes?
Yeah, who has snowshoes?
My parents.
You always, like, when a blizzard comes around, you always see an idiot snowshoeing. I always get, I hate those people.
No, they're better than that. They're not, they don't wait for the blizzard. They get 2 inches of snow. They're like, well, who wants to go snowshoe around the property? No, I don't. The other one that I loved in this and growing up is they were big cross country skiers. And as a kid, there's nothing worse than cross country skiing.
So hard.
It's so hard and it's so flat.
Yes, it's so, it's exercise.
It is. And if something goes awry, it goes awry. You're like, the ski's crossed over. Now you're, it's too much, there's too much snow in your ski and you're just like, you can't get going. And then you get really excited because you cross up a hill thinking what goes up comes down. And then it's like, there's the ramp. And you're like, what's the point?
Yeah, it's terrible. Like, we went skiing just over Christmas, and, you go down the hill, it's great, and then all of a sudden, you're on flat ground, and you're like, oh,
God. For like an hour.
This
it's
stinks.
Exactly the audible experience. Pete, do that again. I could feel my forearms hurting.
Ah.
Right. Oh God, what's going on? And why are we going so slow? I thought this was skiing. I'm supposed to go faster than walking. Anyway, I digress. It is so I'm excited to go to Jackson Park, I guess is the point, to see the Japanese garden. I might try to do that in the next couple weeks. And it's Yoko Ono. Yeah. And you know, we should work it. She's gonna come through.
Yeah.
Be great to talk to her. I just talked about her art. I would make a promise to her. I don't know if I even care about the Beatles. I am fascinated with Yoko Ono's art life. I always have been. I thought she was unbelievable experimental artist and really cool stuff. And I would be really, really interested in talking to her. She can't talk to us, but.
You never know. Why not? Well, she does things.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
She was at Pitchfork a couple of years ago, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was, wasn't she?
So
maybe.
She'll be around.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little Walk of Fame. And then Steve Gadlin from The Frying Pan coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. So Download here on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman. Coming up here in just a couple minutes, Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin, 312-981-7200. Are you ready for the best local radio at 10 o'clock on a Friday night that you're ever going to find?
Local?
Steve, yeah, I guess it's not. I guess regional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess up against the regionals.
It's the best regional hour of radio.
Thank you for the correction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. Tonight's going to be great. Steve Gadlin, of course, from IWantToDrawCatForYou.com. He won on Shark Tank. Now he comes here before he pitches new ideas to Mark Cuban to workshop them. People are already calling in. No. It's a terrible idea. We haven't heard it yet. What a day for WGN Radio. It started this morning at 10 o'clock. A tremendous, tremendous event. Congratulations to everybody here at WGN Radio who put it on. So fun to Jackie and everybody involved at WGN Management, to Jimmy DeCastro and Todd Manley. I mean, it's perfect.
It's incredible.
Steve Cochran and Steve Bertrand were great MCs.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great event. It really is. You look out and you're like, there's the Wrigley Building and Wacker Drive, and there's a stage, and there's all these luminaries from not only WGN but from other media outlets that are here, because and there are cameras and fans and people and listeners. It's just a tremendous event.
Yeah.
And it reminds, I mean, how, you know, just great it is to have WGN Radio in our lives.
Yeah, you feel very fortunate and lucky to work for
it's amazing to work for the organization, but it's also amazing to me. I always think about it as a listener. I always think, like, it's really great that WGN Radio exists, in a way. You know, it's live, local, 24/7, and it kind of gives you this, and then, you know, to see some of the greats go into the WGN Walk of Fame and have them on stage and hear their stories, you know, it's remarkable. And it was great. I mean, and the reception afterwards upstairs, it was really fun. It's good to, it's also, you know, it's great for you and me, Pete, because
we work this shift and we're always on at night. And so I don't get the chance to see some of my favorite people here. Yeah. Andrea Darlis is one of my favorite people.
She's the best. She's so great.
And, you know, our paths don't cross that much, so it's because of schedules. And she's actually emceeing at the Bike to Drive this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Which I am as well. But again, hilarious, ironically, I guess it's more coincidentally. I always get irony and coincident mixed up. She's doing the 5:30, 6 a.m. emceeing, and I'm doing the 9:30.
Oh.
So she's doing the beginning, I'm doing the end. So we won't see each other.
Oh, that stinks. Well, can you go a little early?
I'm not going to go at 5:30 just so I can be like, hi, Andrea, I saw you yesterday.
Well, like 7.
No, I'll be there. I'll be around. I got stuff to do, man.
We're meeting at the station here at 6:30. And then I think we're riding our bike somewhere.
That sounds awesome. I'm not going to ride.
You're
the MC. I got to get myself prepped up. I can't be wasting all of my time that I need, my meditative time, you know, my time to prepare to read what they put in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sweating on a bike.
Plus, you know, you're the talent here. You know, you have a clause, I'm sure, in your contract that says you can't do anything dangerous.
Exactly. You're not going to see Rokan doing this dangerous bike to drive.
Mm-mm.
No, I was, you know, the truth of the matter is, and I kind of, we've been joking about it all week, but I don't have a bike. I need to get a bike. I had a bike, it broke. I had another bike, and I left it at my old condo when I moved. And I was talking to a neighbor. I ran into an old neighbor who, at the school function, and he had moved out. They had moved out. Their family moved out of the condo as well, like next door. And I was like, yeah, you know, the hard part is I got this bike thing, and I think I left an old bike there. And he's like, oh, man, I left two. Oh, I'm like, there's all these, like, dead bikes on the bottom. I'm like, ah. Oh, no. So, anyway, some tremendous tremendous fun today. And there's going to be more fun at the Bike to Drive on Sunday.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
One of the highlights today, obviously Dean Richards, who I know, and I you know, I love Dean. So it was really fun to see him be honored in that way. But there were a lot of people I didn't necessarily work with or know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Marilyn Miller.
Yeah, Wally
producer's
producer. Yeah.
And what she talked about up on stage about being a producer and what it meant to connect with the listeners and what it meant to do that kind of show. You know, it really felt great that WGN Radio honored producers. As a longtime producer myself for 20 years, you know, a lot of time the work behind the scenes doesn't get the same sort of recognition as the people who are in front of the mic. And I thought that was really classy. Because Marilyn is a pioneer, and she said she was the first woman to produce in primetime.
Yeah.
So morning, and you know, I just thought that was really tremendous, and you know, she was really good, and she talked about some of the old days of like being able to do this job before there were computers and before there was any sort of communication tools.
I mean, that's essentially amazing.
I'm nowhere near the caliber of Marilyn, but I do remember the same thing when I started. You know, it's just before sort of chats and computers started. So it was all, you know, putting fingers up, 1 minute rap. I had a producer, an executive producer who had created a booklet of hand signals. Like it was like the Boy Scouts. Like, this is what you say when you want to tie a knot, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was hand signals. And no one used it. But it was like all these weird kind of, hey, this is how you land a plane. Like to tell a host that they only have a minute left or something like that.
Just the ability to gather news in those days. I mean, I remember when I started too, we cut articles out of the paper. Like get the newspaper. I'm like, oh, this looks interesting.
I know, right?
Tape it onto like a
sheet. Tape it onto a sheet. It's so dumb. It was so dumb. Ugh. And I told you, Richard Steele, I think I told Richard on the air, he would always get mad at me because I would never cut it where the date of the article was on it. So I'd cut it and I'd give it to him. He's like, when was this? I'm like, oh, I just thought you would know. It was yesterday. And he's like, I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. Like, where is the Kaufman? Kaufman, where's the date? I'm like, So great today to have all the people here. I mean, so many great people. It was so good. It was so fun, man. So fun.
Beautiful day.
Mm-hmm. It worked out. We beat the rain. All right, coming up, The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. Stay with us.
Got my hand, what? My hand in the frying pan.
All right, it's The Download here on WGN Radio, and it's Friday night at 10 o'clock, so it's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brain behind the successful local business, IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. Now, Steve has to go back to Mark Cuban with new ideas. But before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes here to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. He gives his exclusive business idea to us so we can poke holes into it and give Steve the confidence he needs to pitch it to Cuban himself. Steve Gadlin, welcome back to the frying pan, my friend.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here. I'm jazzed because tonight I've got one. That's almost a guaranteed winner.
Look at you. Yeah. Look at the excitement.
I'm excited. I'm excited to be emanating. In studio.
Yeah, you're in
and
studio.
I'm glad I brought my... This is my best invention yet. So I dare anyone to say that they wouldn't buy one. And I'll call them out on that.
All right. 312-981-7200. That's his idea tonight. Sheer confidence.
Yep.
There's no other idea. He's just confident.
No. There's an invention behind that confidence.
All right, Steve Gadlin, what is this week's frying pan?
Okay, well, gosh, we all love eating corn on the cob.
Mm-hmm.
But how frustrating is it? Do you know when you eat corn on the cob, you're throwing away a cob every single time?
Right.
That's the bulk of the product is the cob, and we just waste it. We throw it away.
Right.
So I've invented something called the cobby. Now, the cobby is a synthetic, reusable cob that you can put your corn on, so you don't buy the corn with the cobs. You buy just the regular corn, the plain corn, and you don't have to keep wasting cobs. You spread on cobby paste, which is an edible adhesive,
mm-hmm.
vegetable-based adhesive, and then you roll it in a tub of just the plain corn, and then you eat it off your cob. And when you're done, you throw cobby in the dishwasher, or you run it through the sink, and you can spread on some more cobby paste and roll it through some more corn. So you could basically only use one cob for your entire life. No more buying corn on the cob and wasting the cob. You can just buy the corn, the plain corn, that comes without the cob.
The cobby.
And you know what? There's more. Because you're thinking, that's great, but since corn doesn't come attached to the cobby, maybe it's possible to use it for something else. Well, you're right, because cobby paste will stick anything to that thing. You can have steak on the cob. Blueberries on the cob, raisins on the cob, popcorn on the cob. That's a fun
one. That's fun, yeah.
Yeah. All sorts of foods on the cob.
Well, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see where your confidence comes from.
Yep.
The cobby, 312.
And you know that we're not wasting cobs anymore, so it's green, and it's for the environment.
312-981-7200. Let's talk about the cobby, which is interesting because this would be an invention that, I mean, goes... I mean, it'd be sort of an improvement on corn on the cob, which, you know, corn on the cob, maize goes back, you know, centuries.
Yeah, and they've wasted so many cobs. With this way, you're never wasting cobs because you just buy the plain corn in the can and you can reuse the same cob over and over again. And it's great. It still gives you that same mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. That cobby paste, that vegetable-based cobby paste has been specially formulated to give you that mouthfeel of yanking fleshy corn off of the... off of the cob,
right.
Or any food, really.
Well, I have questions.
Yeah, chocolate chips on the cob. Imagine how delicious that would be.
I'm intrigued more about that concept, the aspect of being able to eat different foods off the cob.
But I want you to be impressed by how green this is and how many cobs we're saving.
Right. Okay, well, I'll try to be impressed by that. Okay. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. What do we think of the cobby? What do we think? Different foods on the cob?
Yeah.
Saving the environment.
Saving the environment because no more throwing away those cobs.
All right. Well, let's take a break so we can get some of these calls. Yeah.
Everyone in the family gets their own cobby.
There's a lot of cobbies.
Mm-hmm.
312-981-7200. It's the frying pan.
here on WGN Radio. Stay with us.
Got my head, what? My head in the frying pan.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. It's Friday night at 10, so that means Steve Gadlin from IWantToDrawACatForYou.com, the local innovator, inventor, entrepreneur, is in studio with us with the frying pan. Steve, good to see you.
It's great to be here. I love being in studio.
Let's remind people of this week's invention, the Cobby.
Yeah, so Cobby is a synthetic reusable cob. So normally when we eat corn on the cob, we throw out so many cobs, it's wasteful. And it's not good for the environment to constantly burn through and throw out those cobs. So Cobby allows you to buy the plain corn, not on the cob. So you save a cob. You spread a vegetable-based Cobby paste, a thick Cobby paste on the synthetic cob, and then you can roll it in corn kernels. And then it simulates eating corn off the cob. So you save, you throw it in the washing machine, you reuse it, and boom, it's environmentally safe and green. Now, one of the bonuses, of course, is you can also use Cobby with foods that aren't corn. You can have cake on the cob.
Yes, this is the part that I like. Yeah,
pickles on the cob. Anything really that will adhere to a denture-style paste cream can be edible off this cob.
Okay, 312-981-7200. The lines are lit up. Let's go. Okay, so let's bring up the lines. Let's go to Tom. Tom, yay or nay on the Cobby?
Yes, how are you doing tonight?
Good, how about you?
I stayed up an extra hour to listen to your show.
Thank you very much. What do you think, Tom? Did we like it?
Well, first of all, I got three questions, okay? The first one is, I would like to try it. I'm 55 years old, and I was raised in Naperville on a corn farm and bean farm, okay?
Oh, wow.
Second of all, the paste. Mm-hmm. What is that paste produced out of? And third, my father used to soak the whole ears of corn in the husk and everything, get them real wet, put them on the grill. And that was the best way of steaming the corn. How would we steam the corn on the Cobby?
Yeah. Right. That was one of the questions I had too, Tom. Thanks, Tom, for that.
How do you,
a lot of times you're going to grill corn, you're going to steam corn.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to grill the corn, the plain corn, not the corn on a cob. You don't want to grill the Cobby. It'll go up fast. That's just because of the materials. It's very flammable. But I'll say, what does it take? What is the Cobby paste made out of? It's vegetable based. It's in the same family as a denture cream, which goes in your mouth as well. So it's got a bitter aftertaste, but you can offset that by sugaring your corn or putting sweets on the cob as well.
Okay, let's go
Skittles
to
Skittles on the cob.
Skittles on the cob, yeah. That would be good. Let's go to Mark. Mark, yay or nay on the Cobby?
Yay, with a tweak on your pitch. Great job, Steve.
Thanks.
And I love the show. The pitch, I soft pedaled the green angle just a little bit because the cob was still needed to produce the corn that's in the can.
No. So you buy the plain corn, the cobless corn, the stuff that just comes in the can without a cob.
No, but what I think he's saying is that corn that's in that can was produced with the cob.
No, there are two types. When you go to the store, you'll see there's the cobbed corn, usually in the produce section, but then you can buy canned corn. It's in a whole other section. That's why you're confused. It's cobless corn.
So you're saying that corn that's in the can had no cob when it was produced by the farm?
I don't see how it could have because it's...
Okay, all right. You know what? Keep going.
Okay,
keep going.
I love the product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good product, but soft on the green because there was a cob enabled that corn before it was in the can.
I don't think there was.
Job.
No, we're talking about
all right,
about
we're getting caught
corn.
Up in semantics here. I think that Steve may
not be... He's picturing the corn you see in the
section. I know exactly what Mark is saying. I mean, I think we all do. Mark, what do you think? What was your second point here?
So, yeah, the second point is just the feel and the taste of summer sweet corn off of the farmer's market is really something special. And
yeah, but wasteful.
It will still sell great.
But very wasteful.
It'll still sell great, but that moment in the summer when you've got that summer sweet corn and you're biting into it for the first time each summer, that's not something that you can replace synthetically.
Well,
Thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks for that.
I think the experience is actually very similar, and I think when we educate people at how wasteful eating corn off the cob is, just like smoking is something that feels great, But once people have been educated about how it's harmful for the environment and themselves, well, now, you know, now there's vaping that simulates it, and people seem pretty excited with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of, people who are texting in about that point. They say that the corn cobs are completely biodegradable. The 708 says it's not wasteful. Most excess cobs are made into animal feed. And Tom, who's on the line, Tom is similar. Tom, yay or nay on the cobby?
Let's go nay. Hmm. You guys have so many apartments and townhomes up there. Mm-hmm. Why don't we use the idea that he has put a mount on the end of it so you can mount it on your balcony and use it for a bird or a squirrel feeder?
Oh, that's a good idea. Thanks a lot, Tom.
So in tests, the cobby paste is shown to be actually deadly to small animals. Any animal under 50 pounds would get... It's an instant form of cancer from ingesting the cobby paste and probably would die very quickly. So what you'd end up with is a lot of dead squirrels, cats, raccoons, mm-hmm. and medium-sized dogs on your
We don't want that.
No, so we don't recommend it for feeding type. It's really meant for humans, for larger humans over 50 pounds. So, you know, you spread on that cobby paste.
Well, it begs the question, what about a child?
Well, a larger child, sure. But once they hit that 50-pound threshold, that's when we say go for it. And, hey, you can try it when they're lighter than 50 pounds. I mean, you know, how many people really tighten that car seat as tight as you're supposed to? You know, that's fine. We don't want you to sacrifice joy in life for overbearing, you know, over-concern. But we definitely wouldn't want you feeding it to animals just to stay green.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. Let's go to a couple texts before we get to the news. Mm-hmm. 630 says, this Jim, he says, I kind of like this. Create an optional accessory called the cobby wrap to simulate the steamed corn from the grill.
Yeah, actually, so I forgot to say that when the guy was talking about that before, but that is an idea I had, was we can still get that steam if we use the cobby wrap. And I'd called it the same thing when I thought about it earlier, too.
You did?
Yeah.
You did the same.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So I'm glad they reminded me about my earlier idea.
Okay. Okay, so 312 says you aren't saving a single cob. All the corn in the bag you attached to your device came off a cob.
Well, and again, I think they are mistaking the corn they see in the produce section for the corn in the frozen section, which doesn't come on a cob. It's mm-hmm. just the plain regular kernels in a bag or in a can or in a, you know, plastic clamshell, however it's served.
773's got a good point. They say, nay, if I have to buy corn to put on the cobby, why don't I just eat corn that I bought rather than waste time putting it on it? And two, what does the paste taste like?
Right. So it's to get that enjoyment of eating off the cob. Your teeth push through the sweet, fleshy corn, through the thick, sticky paste, and onto the hard plastic synthetic cob. And it just presents that summery feeling that earlier caller was talking about. Now, the flavor, again, the cobby paste is a little bitter. But we recommend you offset that by sugaring your corn or by alternating corn kernels with M&Ms or Skittles or a sugary candy, just to, you know, it kind of gets you through that bitter aftertaste.
Right. Let's go to, is this Sina? What is it? Sinai?
Sana.
Hi, Sana. Okay, Sana, yay or nay to the cobby?
I'm going with nay. Hmm. I'm going because it's not really a good idea, but it's not so green either because it creates a waste that wasn't there before.
That's it, yeah.
Well, but it saves, you know, countless cobs. If you buy a cobby and if you eat 40 cobs of corn a week on average, now multiply that times 50 weeks because it's easier math, that's 2,000 corn cobs plus then the other 2 weeks. So 2,100 corn cobs basically that you're saving over the course of 1 year.
Hmm.
For the family that eats 40 corn on a cobs in a week.
Who's eating 40?
Well, that's a round number example, okay. Just so we can
all
get
right,
those
it's
high
just a hypothetical,
numbers.
But okay.
But imagine the size of the landfill that you're saving. And that can be turned into playgrounds or green spaces for communities.
Okay.
Community gardens, you know, stuff like that. Green stuff.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for the Cobby. That's this week's frying pan idea. Steve Gadlin's in studio. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the news. And we'll get back to the frying pan. What do we think of the Cobby? Yay or nay? 312-981-7200.
Got my head, what? My head in the frying pan.
Frying pan.
Frying pan.
Frying pan.
Frying pan.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's 10 o'clock. The 10 o'clock hour, 10:30. And that means it's time for Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. He won on Shark Tank with IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. Now he has a development deal with Mark Cuban. Before he brings a new business idea to Cuban, he brings him here to the download. Doesn't usually have success, but he feels that he has a shot here in the second half of the Frying Pan with the Cobby.
That's right. The Cobby is a synthetic and, most importantly, reusable cob. So instead of wasting cobs like we do when we buy corn on the cob, this is reusable. You spread on some cobby paste, roll it in your plain old corn kernels, and then it simulates the feel and flavor of eating corn off the cob. Not only can you use it with corn, but you can use it with other foods like raisins,
pickles, I'm surprised people haven't caught on to that idea. I like that idea.
Yeah, you know, candy on the cob. You can do all sorts of fun treats. On the cob, steak on the cob, chicken on the cob. Cob eating is a pretty popular, you know, you could have a restaurant themed around eating different, all your foods come on the cob, you know?
Right. I like that. 312-981-7200. 312 says, good idea on the cobby. One thing I love about corn is the silky threads getting stuck in your teeth.
Yeah.
Any plans to launch a cobby paste to simulate that sensation?
Well, here's the funny thing is for most people, that's actually a downside to eating corn. Uh-huh. And that's something that does not happen when you eat corn off the cobby. So it's actually an improvement on nature's experience.
Right.
And not only do we improve nature's experience, we're friendly to nature by saving all those cobs from landfills.
312-981-7200. Let's go to Ron. Ron, yay or nay on the cobby?
I'm a yay.
Yes.
Thanks, Ron.
It maybe helps people get to eat more vegetables or whatever. Kids might find it enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And I think his heart is in the right spot. But so when you go to the grocery store and you buy like a can of corn that has no cob in it, that was still grown on a cob.
Yeah.
And a factory has taken that off and placed it.
Thank you. I've been trying to explain that in the break.
I don't
to Steve.
Agree. I'd like to get a farmer in here to answer that for us because I know there's the produce version where you get in the produce section and you see it on the cob. But then when you see it in a can or a bag, that's never been cobbed. They've never cobbed that corn. It's just plain old corn.
It was still grown on a cob.
Well,
so
corn doesn't grow on the cobs.
Yes,
corn's applied to cobs through a process called cobbing. Have you heard of a cobbler, sir? What do you think a cobbler does?
I've heard of peach cobbler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what, Ron, I've been trying in the break. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Shirley. Shirley, yay or nay on the cobby?
Oh, it's a nay. I grew up on a farm.
Okay, here you go.
There's nothing more better than going out to the corn patch and picking the corn, having the hot water ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, can you imagine, just visualize the corn on the cob. If you rolled it on the cobby, you'd have corn going every which way. You wouldn't have a beautiful ear of corn.
Well, thank you, Shirley. Thank you for
beauty
that.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, let me remind you.
Okay.
The nice thing about cobby paste is it's shocking pink, so it provides this great backdrop to the corn kernels or whatever you roll onto the cobby. So, you know, I'd say that's beautiful, too.
It's a
new
different
kind
design,
of
yeah.
Yeah, new kind of beauty.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you have the beauty of knowing you're saving the environment.
630 says, cobblers fix shoes.
Well, I don't know what they do in their spare time, and that's fine. But, you know, cobbler is one who cobs corn, which is taking grown corn kernels and affixing it very meticulously to a cob. A non-reusable cob, I'll add.
Okay, 262 says he's right. I'm a corn farmer in Wisconsin, and I grow cobless corn. It's grown in a zero-gravity chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Well, there we have it. I think that's the official, you know, the official word.
Yeah, the cobbler is a shoemaker. All corn grows on a cob, and the canned stuff is mechanically stripped.
Let's not talk about one specific cobbler. Again, there may be cobblers who also make shoes, but I'm talking about the cobblers that affix corn kernels to non-reusable cobs.
Okay, well, you know what? We're just going to agree to disagree on this one. 214 says, how about keeping it all natural and just glue corn kernels onto zucchinis with anchovy paste? Then your under 50-pound animals and children will enjoy it, too.
That's something you can do if you want, but a zucchini will not be reusable. A zucchini is going to rot after a while, and it's going to add some zucchini flavor to anything you eat. And anchovy paste, I think that caller may have been joking.
Hmm. What's the cobby made of? What kind of plastic?
Yeah, so it's a hard polymer. It's a polymer plastic. It's a little rubbery to the feel. It's like if you imagine a toilet paper roll made out of thick rubber, plasticky rubber with a sheen on it, a rough sandpapery sheen.
Hmm. Okay.
It's hard to explain, but if you can.
Okay.
The nice thing about the way we package the cobby is that you can pop one right out of the box and try it in the store. If you don't like it, you just slide it back into the box and put it back on the shelf.
Hmm. All right, let's go to the lines. Let's go to Matthew. Matthew, yay or nay on the cobby?
I'm not sure because I hate to dog this, but he needs to explain. Everyone's stuck on the corn in the can.
They are.
Because everyone's saying, well, you know, that's using a cob too at some point. If corn in a can doesn't come from a cob, where does it come from?
Well, it comes from the earth. Corn is grown in the earth, and people harvest the kernels. And then in most cases, in commercial corn industry, a cobbler will then take those kernels and affix them in an organic way to an organic cob that's also grown separately. And, you know, it takes a long time, and that cob is not reusable. So we're just doing that same process, but it's a little easier. You just spread the cobby paste on the cobby and then roll it in the fresh kernels.
All right, well then, so corn you're saying is grown from the ground, or can you give me a physical description?
Well, it's yellow and plump. They look like...
I live out in the west suburbs of Chicago, way like Naperville, Aurora. When you drive out west on I-88,
you see a lot of cornfields, right?
Cornfields, and corn grows on cob.
You see cob fields. You're half right, sir. You do see cob fields.
Okay.
So you're saying that's all artificial?
What's artificial? No, it's all natural. I mean, I think no one will disagree that corn was meant for the cob, sir. That's why we are creating the synthetic experience to mimic it.
No, I'm not knocking the product. I think it's a good idea, but it's just to the average person, people assume and see corn growing on a corn stalk. Right. I mean, I'll be honest with you. If you guys were joking and you're just like, let's tell people corn isn't grown on cobs in a cornfield, we would fall for it. Because that's what we see, and that's what I don't have any friends that can say, well, you know where corn really comes from?
Well, yeah, and I've been trying, because I feel the same way, Matt. I don't understand. I mean, I think what you have to understand about Steve and sometimes his limitations is that we'll get caught up in this argument over and over and over around things. This happened a couple weeks ago with Star Wars, and you can't actually use the term Star Wars in your product. Mm-hmm. Let's just continue on past
Here's the thing. If you're up against the average consumer who goes, well, wait a minute, corn's grown in a corn field, you're still using the cob if you take the corn in the can and put it on the cob. You're still, that corn that went somewhere, that's what people think.
Well, so but
I
we don't,
think
we,
it's a great
we,
idea.
We don't have to focus on that as a marketing aspect. I'll drop the green piece. You know, if people are that confused.
I'm just saying you're going to have a hard time explaining that to people because they're not going to believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only because they're not, it's not what they see.
But I think what they'll be excited about is the prospect, even if they don't agree with me there and don't understand nature the way I do, you know, as someone who's grown up near a lot of nature and has very strong aptitude for learning new things. The potential to put other things on the cob is something that no one's really commenting on, I think is a very exciting
piece
of this product.
Well, I think what we just came through with Matthew is that we'll be in a position where we can move on from the idea of how corn is grown and really get to the concept of cobbing food. Let's go to Jim. Jim, yay or nay on the cobby?
No way.
Okay.
I've I've been in the farming business for over 45 years, and I have never seen corn growing other than on a cob.
Now we're back to the cob. Okay.
But can you imagine the utility of being able to put other foods on a synthetic reusable cob? Say, raisins on the cob or peas on the cob.
That I understand. I understand you're trying to create a product to sell. I understand that.
Yeah.
But when you try and tell people that corn is grown in the ground, similar to peanuts, you are full. You're telling them the wrong story, my friend. Corn well, comes. Corn is this, grown.
I
on
mean,
a cob,
this is an example of Big Farmer. Call you know this is Big Farmer calling in trying to confuse the American public again, and I resent that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay. You are completely wrong, my young friend.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for that. I agree. Well, I agree with Jim on this one. 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll read some of the more colorful texts that have come in about the cobby. Stay with us.
Got my hand. What? My hand in the frying pan.
It's a download here. We're going to go rapid fire since we only got about 6 minutes left. I'm going to get through the phone callers first, then we're going to read all the texts. Steve, try to keep your responses to a minimum if you can. Mary, yay or nay on the cobby?
Nay. I live in a town of 500 people, 75 miles south of Chicago. It's still a cornfield. Naperville ain't been a cornfield for years. Corn and beans. You ask Ori and you ask Max. Yep. It's and I got Max's signature when Orion was signing his book up there in Streeter years ago. But corn and beans are the life's blood of this country. And you know, if you don't know anything about, I still don't know, but the heart of this town is a grain elevator.
Hmm.
Corn and beans put the bread on the table.
And
Jim
Mary,
is
beans,
right.
Beans are thanks, good. Mary. They're also good for your heart.
Yeah, okay. All right. Tom, what do we think of the cobby, Tom?
Oh, it's you know, we don't need negativity like that, lady. That, I think it's brilliant.
Thank you, Tom.
See, I'm a traveling guy, so I'm always in my car. Can you imagine? I mean, I'd love to be part of your team. I can roll the cobby with Fruit Loops, get in my car, and I'm eating a bowl of cereal on the way to work.
Yeah.
If I want a snack and I want to be healthy, I can roll it with almonds or even corn nuts.
That's right.
Which is corn.
Yeah, and Tom.
And now I'm... With one hand, I'm driving my car. I don't have bags all over my car spilling stuff. I'm just eating it right off the cob.
That's right.
There you go.
And
thanks,
Tom.
Tom.
When you
Tom's
near
right.
the end of your cob, since it's Bluetooth compatible and connected to your phone, you'll get a text message letting you know it's time to refill.
There you go. Yep. Norm, yay or nay on the cobby?
Yeah, hey, listen. My name is Norm Zaleski. I am chairman of the International Cowboys Union of North America.
Okay.
Hi, Norm.
Hey,
Norm. Yes, your guest there is... definitely wrong. We work on shoes.
Oh, right. That's what I said, too, yeah.
Privately as well.
Okay, thanks, Norm.
Yeah.
Let's go to Tom. Tom, yay or nay on the cobby?
I like the idea for snacks and things like that, but you need a different adhesive, one that won't cause cancer.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for pointing that out, Tom. That's something that I thought was obviously...
Well, maybe in, you know, 2.0.
Okay. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah. Hit me with it.
Where okay, so here's some of the stuff.
We're
leaning nay.
Okay.
We're going to lead. I heard a couple of yays, but they were usually either sarcastic or with caveats.
Got it.
So we're going to just sort of go through this.
Okay.
630 will start us off. dumdumdumdumdum.com.
Okay.
It's, there's some other words there, but we're going to leave it there.
Okay.
815. This guy is the biggest idiot that I've ever heard talk. I want to punch him in his mouth. Wow.
Well, that's I don't appreciate
that's
that.
That's a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
This is in all caps. Does this idiot know that all corn grows on a cob and is removed by a cannery to put corn in a can?
Well, I've recently been educated to that point, but it's irrelevant. Right. How about putting other things on the cob? How exciting is that?
708 says this guy loses credibility on the growing of corn. Then you try to take something healthy like eating a vegetable and add M&Ms or Skittles to hide the taste of the paste. Then you claim it's green but it's waste water to have a wash it. I've read better and more credible news in The Onion.
Okay.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Hmm.
Well, we could do onion on the cob.
Okay. 773 says this guy is nonsense every week. Every week he is a waste of time.
Well, if it's a waste of time to share innovation... then sign me up for waste of time.
There you go.
Class
773 is pretty simple. He's a liar. That's it.
Well, I disagree. I'm okay. A salesman. There's a fine line between the two, but I stand firmly entrenched on the salesman side.
815 says it's official. CP3P is the one who glues each kernel to the cob. That's a callback to an old bit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fact.
This guy is a joke. We did that one. Okay. 608 says this dude has no idea what he's talking about. I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Are these texts from last week now?
No, these are fresh. Okay. These are fresh. Okay. 773, he's making a fool of himself and showing how truly ignorant he is.
Hmm. Well, it takes one to know one, I'll say.
Well, you know. 724 said Mark Cuban just canceled his contract with Steve.
Okay.
Steve has no good ideas. He sucks.
Okay.
Sorry.
Got it.
I'm just reading what I'm not making. This is what I get.
I know.
606 says insanity is in the mind of the Cobby inventor. Okay. That's a poem of some sort.
Yeah.
219 says you couldn't invent your way out of a wet paper bag if you had a bucket of water and a dry bag.
Okay.
630 says he can give us the number of his dealer because I like what he's on.
Okay. Well, we work with several different manufacturers, and I don't like to give out our suppliers. You know.
262 says, hot damn, he's a genius.
Thank you.
I've been using the same old soggy cob over and over and over.
Well,
that's,
you know,
that's sarcasm.
Yeah, that's. I hope they're not using... the same cob.
708 says, what planet is this guy on? Let's keep going. Hold on. 630, how does he dress himself?
Well, one leg at a time.
312 says, I love the undereducated. I think he's talking about you.
Well, he might be talking about some of the callers, too. We don't know.
219 says, he needs a moment to find himself.
Okay. Ooh. Well, we all do, really.
Yee. Let's see here. I'm queuing down. What's this plastic? We did that. 630, thinning the herd is one thing, but this just sounds dangerous. But I imagine that he can get investors, especially if they own healthcare facilities.
Well, you know,
whatever's good for the bottom line.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad they brought that up because, again, when I pitch ideas here, it's primarily prepping for pitching to investors, not consumers. We will craft marketing campaigns to trick the consumer into purchasing or convince the consumer to purchase the product. But this is really all about the bottom line and the investor.
Hmm. For all of us, this is 219, for all of us whose sleep is to rejuvenate the mind, body, and spirit, and for some of us it's to expand and reinvent imagination, you, sir, are not part of the last once again. So that's, they had done that one before.
Yeah, and I think these inspirational quotes are great, and I appreciate them, and I will keep trying.
Okay. Why does this guy even get airtime? No. No. I'm finding the no's here.
It's funny.
Is this
walked
the same
in
banana
here,
peeler idiot? Yep.
Well, it's yes. I walked in here sure I had a winner, and once again, I think the listeners are ignoring the most enticing feature of the cobby, which is you can put steak on the cob, peas on the cob, bologna on the cob, anything you want on the cob. And they're really hung up on my misunderstanding of how corn is actually grown.
Right.
Forget that part. I admit I was wrong. I thought corn was applied to cobs, but fine. It grows on the cob. So this isn't a green product, but it's, you know, it's still an innovative, fun mealtime treat to put other things on the cob if you are over 50 pounds.
Okay, and just as a final one here, in the 847 says, in the long, proud history of WGN Radio, nothing as imbecile and moronic has ever been heard as this idiot and his so-called inventions.
Okay.
You two, and I'm included in this, you two ruin Friday nights.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a lot to shoulder, but I
think
I think
we ruin it. I don't know. We're putting an invention out there, and people are calling up to say if they like it.
I mean, what about my Friday night? Yeah. Why doesn't that caller think about how my Friday night is going? A bunch of people yelling at me and trying to educate me on corn harvesting. You know, I
feel bad for you.
Yeah.
I think at a certain point you should maybe have a better concept of the techniques and the science and information.
I'm not going to have any more corn inventions. All right. Who cares? Okay.
Steve Gadlin, I want to draw a cat for you.com. The cobby didn't go so well, but you know what? You did great. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you next Friday.
All right, that's going to do it tonight for me. Patty Vasquez up night. Late, up next with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. And after that, Craig Collins is in for Matt Bubala. There we go. It's an exciting night here on WGN Radio. We'll be back on Tuesday. Matt Bubala is filling in for us on Monday, Memorial Day. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. We'll be back on Tuesday. This is WGN Radio Chicago and WGNRadio.com, 720 WGN Chicago. Have a great weekend, Mr. Rob Martier.